All right, What's Brunch Show audience, I have a special offer for you, and it comes from your friends at the LA Grizzlies, the official football team of the LA Sheriff's Department. It is an opportunity drawing, a You Pick It ticket. You pick the game you want to go to, any regular season game, anywhere in the continental U.S. for any pro, college, team, or sporting event. You win the prize, you get to pick it. Want to go to Yankees Red Sox? Want to see the Packers at Lambeau Field? Ever want to go to the Iron Bowl? Or the world's largest outdoor cocktail party? Heck, the Bruins play LSU in a year or two. Pick that game. You can hang out with What's Bruin. If you win the drawing, you get two tickets for any regular season sporting event in the continental United States, plus airfare for two, plus three nights at a local hotel for you to enjoy your experience of going to that game. And all you got to do is buy your ticket at lagrizzlies.org. There's a link right there on the homepage. So support your Grizzlies this season as we head into the 2023 spring football season for the National Public Safety Football League, and get yourself a sweet, awesome sports experience. Tickets are just $20 a piece, and you can buy them at lagrizzlies.org. Thank you very much, and go Bruins, and go Grizzlies.
This is Maurice Jones-Drew, and you're listening to the What's Bruin Show.
You're listening to the What's Bruin Show, part of the What's Bruin Show Network, with your hosts, Jake Merrifield, Bill Shirley, Jamal Artis, and Mike Regalado, bringing you anything and everything UCLA sports. And now, it's time for the What's Bruin Show.
And welcome to What's Bruin, a show about anything and everything Bruin sports. I am your host, Bill Shirley.
Bill is built on the lean and graceful lines of an early Italian primitive. Any food he eats shows up on him at once like an ostrich swallowing a baseball.
What is that from?
I can't say that's completely accurate. Me and you are more stout of stature.
Yeah.
So like we could probably eat a whole ham and it'd take a couple days to show up on us.
Yeah.
But I love that. That's from a wonderful book I'm reading right now.
Oh, that's a book.
Ernest Hemingway's.
Okay.
Bylines. So basically it's all of his reporting and like work he did for Esquire before and during and in between him writing novels. And that was a report he was giving from a trip he took in Germany. And it's like post-World War I, pre-World War II. And he's like reporting on like for the Toronto Star about like inflation in Germany. It's like crazy. Like he's talking about after the war on this border town in Germany. The first report is in like 1920.
Yeah.
All the French will go over the border to buy up all of the pastries and all of the food in the Germantown every evening because the inflation's so insane that like the French, whatever the French, let's say the French dollar, whatever it is, whatever, the franc or whatever, it's like 50 times what the equivalent German like the mark would be been, right?
Well, yeah.
And I'm not even exaggerating. There's huge, like crazy inflation. So you could walk over there with a couple pennies and buy out the whole bakery basically is what was happening. So that was in like 1920. But then by 1923, he goes back to the same town and the town's completely shut down because of that, they stopped anybody crossing the border at all either way. And all of the industry in the whole town fell apart. And it was part of like the Germans devaluing their currency to basically stick it to the French for all the all the conditions put in place after World War I.
Yeah,
but it just like totally obviously it's more complicated than that, but it totally was part of that country and all the people in the country just getting ruined, which led to the rise of fascism, leads to World War II. It's crazy. But anyways, this book, Bylines, all these great reports, and like some of the reports are about fishing in a pond, fishing in a stream, fly fishing and stuff, and some of them's about political stuff. There's this great little thing with, audible.com/What's Bruin Show if you want to get a subscription. My favorite part so far was he's doing a report about a conference where Mussolini is going to speak. And Mussolini wants to be seen as really, really like authoritative and wants to seems in control. And he talks about how as the reporters are shuffling in, he's sitting at a desk intently reading a book. And then, Hemingway's like, oh yeah, he really wants to look like he's really, really into this book.
Sure.
Hemingway says he sidles around a corner to try to get a glance at what he's reading. And he said it was an English French dictionary and it was upside down. So it's like a scene from a movie, right? But just like it's funny.
great writers, like, doing great writing, mm-hmm. no matter what kind of writing they're doing, whether it's a report or, you know, it's a opinion piece or it's a novel, right? That's what this guy could do, and that's young Hemingway or whatever. But I was struck that, you know, back then you have a good writer just writing the facts.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic, but it was also a very, you know, worthy report.
Sure.
And now we flip around where it's like nobody actually reports anything. They just want to give you their opinion about stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, there's a difference there, folks. I'm sorry.
And there's a middle ground.
I digress. Bill, what's going on?
Listen.
This is a great book.
No, good. I'm glad. Let's go ahead and let's talk about the show, right? The show is, this is the What's Brewing show. This is one of many great shows on one great network, right? And that's the WS.
Great job, Bill.
Thank you. The WBS network, okay? So we have the What's Brewing show, we have West Coast Bias, we have B Team, and we have the Bare Minimum, all right? Mm-hmm. Check them all out, right? Listen to them
all. The Bare Minimum.
That's right. That's really good. You can go ahead and tweet the show at What's Brewing show. You can go ahead and email us, whatsbrewingshow@gmail.com, or you can also subscribe. Jake, is it subscribe on Substack, or is it just...
You subscribe on Substack. We haven't done anything to monetize Substack yet.
Okay.
Although we may, at some point, transition the Patreon into Substack.
Okay.
But as of right now, you just subscribe, and just another place you can get the show.
Awesome. And that's whatsbrewing.substack.com.
Google Play, Apple Podcasts,
all of
Substack.
It. All of those. Right. So that's good. Let's go on and talk about the fact that we have not, and I repeat, we have not received a call in a few weeks. Jake?
We haven't. We do need a call. So somebody just like call into the show and leave a message so that we don't lose the What's Brewing hotline, just like Raina Troy lost the rant line. So I'm going to task a listener to call the show this week. We know you're out there. Just call and say something.
Good.
Because I'm not going to, I have too much dignity to call ourselves. I'm not going to do it.
And I never.
If you guys are going to let the What's Brewing hotline die, then that's on you.
Hey,
that blood is on your hands.
It's on your hands because you
so
know.
Somebody call the goddamn show. I don't care what you say. Just say hi. Say what's up.
But Jake, you know why I wouldn't call it? Because I always forget the number.
Yes.
But that number.
I wouldn't ask you to do it.
I know, because I'd be like, "What's the number again?"
Yeah.
And that number is
805-399-4WBS.
Suck it, Raina Troy.
Suck it, Raina Troy.
There you go. All right. So. Let's get on with the bro-affiliated headlines with Mike.
Well, how are we going to do that when there ain't no Mike here?
What do you mean he's not here?
Well, he's not here.
He's always here. He's in our hearts.
That's true. He is here. God. But I mean, in case you haven't noticed, Mike hasn't talked yet.
No, that's true.
Because he's not physically with us. But this is not a BJ edition.
Welcome to the BJ edition.
There is going to be some Mike on the show.
Yes.
But we have to call him. And because he's had to, what did he say? He had to get his brakes done or something?
Yes.
He had something to do that was preventing him from coming up here.
Sure.
And God knows we need him to get his brakes done because we don't want him to, like, you know, die in a horrible accident coming down the 405 from the west side or whatever.
He tries to get off at Reseda and realizes he can't.
Oh, no!
And
it's like in that, like, movies, like, stop the brakes. Or like Toons is the cat. I can see that.
I can see it. But yeah, so.
So we are going to get Mike on the horn, and then we will have some bro-affiliated headlines with Mike, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk a little bit about basketball. And then we're going to probably just do What's Brewing, because unlike, we have some constraints to the show tonight.
Yes.
On both ends.
Yes, we do.
Number one, we can't kind of get into the show until we get Mike on the phone. We haven't been able to get Mike on the phone yet. And on the other side of it, Bill's got a hard out tonight.
I do.
Hard out Bill.
Hard out Bill with at 8 p.m. I got to go.
And the time is ticking away right now. It's 7:12 right now on my clock. So, yes, I am forced to work this way. And I resent it deeply.
You do?
But generally, I mean, in general, I'd say at least 67% of our friendship has been me being resentful.
I would probably say 90%.
You're probably right.
90%. It's just your favorite two words are effing Bill. I mean,
effing Bill.
Effing Bill.
But it's all with love.
Yes, of course.
It's with love. And we're sitting here. I mean, the silver lining is we get to watch LeBron James possibly break the scoring record at a game that I sold for well under value before I realized that I could sell it for way over value. So that's a little bit of a shame. And I'm not at the game, of course. I'm sitting here talking to Bill. But that's about to happen, too. So we have a lot of things going on.
That's right.
But none of them are podcasting the What's Brewing Symposium. I don't even have a drink in my hand, Bill.
You don't. You don't. I had a Diet Coke. And you don't. You actually have a Diet Coke.
Let's be real. Of course I have my Diet Coke. But I don't have an actual drink.
Yes.
Yeah. But All right, I'm done vamping, but we'll bring Mike on here in a minute and get going with the show.
All right. Bro.
All right, so we have managed to corral Mike from Parts Unknown. He was on assignment, hopefully getting his car fixed. Maybe not. Who knows? But Mikey, you're here on the phone now. What's going on?
Hey, thank you very much. Just so we can talk about a little bit of football, a little bit of basketball, but some quick bro-affiliated headlines.
Sounds good.
Jake, it is official. Dorian Thompson-Robinson is UCLA's all-time passing yards leader. This was... this really tore
baller,
some people.
It's,
I want to know why I'm not getting credit for breaking the story. This, first of all, because I brought this up like 3 freaking weeks ago, and nobody's making a fuss about nothing. Nobody's getting to the bottom of things. No, and then all of a sudden, Ben Bolch finally gets an answer, and it's like, or I don't know who broke the story. Did Bro do it, or did Ben Bolch do it? Who do you know, Mike?
It was actually, what is his name? Tracy McDonald from Rivals, UCLA's Rivals site. Yeah, he's the one. And I heard it was a communication thing, because usually we get that information from the SIDs. We didn't get it at Bro until, you know, later that night. So, I heard about it. I was kind of prepping something, and then we got confirmation.
I brought UCLA's this up the week after the freaking game, and nobody cares what Jake said. And then now 3 weeks later, I'm supposed to care. I don't give a damn. I knew this was happening before. I want justice. For the record, whatever. I don't know. I don't know if I'm happy or not, because I love DTR. But then again, I love Kate McNown. And I'm like, I don't know who I want to be the all-time leading passer. You know? I don't know.
Do you think it was a bit of, let's just give it to DTR? Or did you go back and actually see the game and recollect all his yards?
I will tell you this. I can't imagine a world in which I would go back and audit a game for the total yards or whatever. So whatever process this happened seems a little silly to me. But then I guess if being the all-time leading passer of your institution at which you played 5 years is on the line, then maybe I guess I would push for it. I don't know. As long as right now, if I fired up the game and watching the game with my own two ojitos, if I tabulated the yards myself, I would come to the same conclusion as the UCLA SID, then I'm fine with the outcome if it's actually the right outcome, even though it is a little silly that they had to re-audit it. That part's kind of weird. But like I said, I love DTR, love Kate McNown, you know, whatever. It is what it is. It does, I will say this, poetically, it's about as correct of a ending to his career as you could get, right? I mean, you know, just like the game itself, where he starts off like with his hair on fire, and then we have all this weird muddle of confusion ending in an injury where he seemingly comes up just short of the record, and his career ends with a whimper and not a, you know, an explosion. This kind of fits the DTR profile for his career at UCLA, I would say. Love him, but there's it's just another up and down moment in his long tenure as a Bruin.
Mm-hmm. So either way, congratulations to him.
Absolutely.
What else do we have? Tracy puts out these...
Mike Regalado.
Tracy Pearson. These rankings of the recruits that are coming in, and put out the February rankings, the power poll, basically. And just to give you a small sample, number one, J. Michael Sturdivant, and that's because, I mean, he just proved himself to be quite the receiver. Don't listen to what Jamal says. I think he's just jealous. Love you, Jamal.
Megan,
but it's just
him.
You know, it just go kind of just it gives a refresher on the transfers that are coming in.
Okay, so like he's rating just the transfers or the whole class coming in?
He does both.
Yeah.
This one was just the transfers. So.
And right now, UCLA, since we last talked, UCLA moved up to number 6 in the transfer rankings, it looks like.
Yes. And what were they overall? I think there were some of the...
Overall, I think they're...
24th,
right now,
I believe.
24th.
Either way.
Yeah, 24th.
I have a few articles coming out about football. They're not out yet, but ESPN has released their... part of what... the SP Plus does is not only takes into consideration UCLA's offense and defense, but returning production. And that was released today. And UCLA was way far down on the list. They were, I have my notes here. I believe they were 59th, which is funny because last season they were in the top five. I think they were third in returning production. And obviously that's because they're losing a lot of players on offense.
Maybe they're losing. Zach Charbonnet and DTR are both gone. So this guy's gone. Mm-hmm. Zach. No, he's not returning. He's gone now. And then this guy's gone.
DTR is a good quarterback.
Yeah, both of those guys are gone, so that's going to be a lot of your production.
Exactly. But the defense, not so bad. I believe they were in the top 15 of defensive returning production.
So you're saying...
They have 75% of the defensive side of the ball coming back next year.
And the devil's advocate side of that would be these guys weren't very good on defense, although I could say some things that maybe mitigate that or, you know, that are in a defense of the defense.
Oh, me too, yeah.
But
or at least from a development standpoint,
bringing back,
we're going to see a lot more of the Murphys and Latu.
Yeah, but is bringing back 75% of a you know bottom 100 defense good? That's a question for you all.
Exactly. Yeah, as far as basketball, we have practice videos, we have interviews. I'm going to have my weekly stats article come out, and one of the two things that I uncovered today, actually Josh Lewin had a hand in it. I'm gonna actually talk about that when we discuss the games that were. It's just the fact that UCLA has been so dominant defensively at the end of games, but also Jaime Jaquez is only 21 points away from being in the top 20 of UCLA's all-time scorers.
Well, that's so exciting.
That's a big milestone coming up. But yeah, we're going to talk about the upcoming games against Oregon and Oregon State. And
Mike, you were talking about some sort of tweet or poll or something you put out that got a stir. Do you want to talk about that right now while we're sitting here?
Sure. Yeah. No, I was just. Even though we're in basketball season, I still like to talk about football. Everybody likes to talk about football. Football has now become a year-round sport. College, you just can't get enough of it. Way too early lists. You know, who's the Heisman front runner? Who's the way too early Heisman front runner? All this stuff that people just can't stop talking about football. And why not? Because it's a fun sport, and we love our teams. But I put out a way too early poll for the Pac-12, and let me just put it to you this way. I put that poll out yesterday afternoon, just when I was bored at work. I was on a break and I was like, just want to put this out there. And then I asked people what they thought, you know, what they thought the order for the Pac-12 should be next season, and got a lot of really good responses. But I put a tweet out this morning that says, you know, you put out a good poll when you have an equal mixture of, yeah, I completely agree with, yeah, I would move this and this and this with, you're out of your goddamn mind.
Nice.
So I think I did a really good job. But my way too early poll is Utah first, number two, Washington, number three, USC, number four, UCLA, number five, Oregon, number six, Oregon State, seven, Washington State, eight, Cal, nine, Arizona, 10, Colorado, 11, Stanford, and 12, Arizona State. And a lot of the people that were chirping were mostly Oregon and Oregon State folk because they think that UCLA is going to be horrible next year. And did you not see them play last year? And I'm like, look, this is way too early. This is just based on what I've read from transfers and who's returning and who left.
Wait, where did you have the Ducks?
And that's a... What happened?
You had the Ducks where?
I put Oregon fifth.
And you had UCLA where?
Fourth.
Okay. And that's why they're pissed, right?
Exactly. And you know, and that's the thing. The top six, I mean, other than Utah, I really think Utah is just going to be, you know, again, the top of the crop. The next five are actually really difficult because they were all really good this year. They were all, they've all upgraded in some sort of way. So it honestly, you could literally interchange two through six, Washington, USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Oregon State. And I don't think you'd be wrong. you know, it's I talked about how, you know, people were upset that UCLA was fifth in the Pac-12. It's like, yes, but they were still really good. The top six teams in the conference were really good. And then you have USC and Utah, which were, you know, just they were the best. They were the elite of the conferences last season. But, you know, it's a way too early poll. And I just wanted to get people's opinions. And it seemed like a lot of people were actually not as rabid as one would be when a rival fan or reporter puts out stuff like this. But I, you know, even people that were like, yeah, I don't think you're right on this, but they would be cordial and say, well, this is what I think would happen. But anyway,
no,
what do you think? Do you,
I think
not my rankings, but just my logic for the rankings. Do you think it's sound?
No, I think it's fine. You know, I don't think I'd put Oregon behind the Bruins in any way, shape, or form. I think the Oregon would have to be in that. I don't know. I think the Bruins just have the giant unknown of they don't know who their quarterback's going to be, and they don't really know who their running back's going to be. We think that this guy's going to be good. You know, they have Moore coming in. They have the Schley coming in. They have Carson Steele coming in and all this stuff. Like, we think they're going to be good on offense, but until we see it, I don't think we can really make any big conclusions. And with, you know, with Williams coming back for SC, with Penix coming back for the Huskies, with Nix coming back for the Ducks, and with Rising coming back for the Utes, I don't see how anybody can, like, crack the top four without having those teams first. And then you have the Beavs with DJU coming in, and you'd have to say that that probably puts them on a slightly better footing than the Bruins, assuming that he's able to have a decent season and seeing how the Beavers finish strong. I think the one thing you can say is that the Pac-12 is going to be, you know, I see six teams that are going to be vying for the conference championship, and I think that, you know, the Beavs and the Bruins are going to be probably not as favored as those other four teams I already mentioned, the Trojans, the Huskies, the Ducks, and the Utes, but I certainly see them in the mix. And then you have six teams that I think are going to be kind of off the, you know, like two tiers basically is where I see the Pac-12 this year, because I don't know how you can definitively call anyone really a cellar dweller at this point, except for maybe the Cardinal. But, you know, Cal was decent. They're probably not going to be very good next year, but they were still semi-decent. Arizona State's going to be getting better, you would think, but they're going to have an adjustment period under Dillingham. Okay. Well, I don't think they're going to be behind Stanford, and I would be surprised if they're behind Cal, right? But I don't think any of those three are in any way, shape, or form going to be possibly competing for the conference title. I don't think the Buffs are either, but I think they're going to have obviously a rapid improvement, kind of maybe how we saw Arizona improve this past year. And then I think that Arizona will be okay, but I don't think they're going to take a big step forward like they did last year. I think they'll still be kind of middling towards the bottom. And then I'm just not convinced that Washington State's got it going on either. So I definitely think that this is going to be a two-tier conference with the Trojans, the Huskies, the Ducks, the Utes, the Beavers, and the Bruins kind of battling for the title, and then the other teams kind of battling to get bowl eligible in some way, shape, or form. But it's going to be a really good conference, and in the last year without the 12-team playoff, I think the Pac-12 is going to beat itself up again, and quite possibly whoever the conference title goes to, it'll be a team that has more than one loss, and they won't make the playoff again, but who cares about all that? I just want to see who's going to win the title, you know? So,
yeah.
But yeah, Mike, I think your logic's perfectly sound. And even though I would disagree on the order of the teams, you know, I think you got it right. Certainly the spirit of it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I did, you know, put a little homerism, but at the same time, I do think UCLA has the potential to do that. Actually, I think they should, at this point, have the potential to be first, but, you know, that's a different story.
I think you definitely have the potential for it. Whether that happens or not, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And just the same thing, you know, there's still question marks with, you know, there were a lot of good offenses in the Pac-12. There really isn't. I mean, Utah had a good defense, but was it an elite? Was it Georgia level? No, that's what I would love to see in the Pac-12, or well,
it's not going to happen. I mean,
I know, especially with one year left with USC and USC bolting for the Big Ten.
None of these Pac-12 teams are going to have an elite defense anytime soon. I don't think, just because you know the state that they're all in now. But the problem I see with the Bruins and the Beavs breaking through, and I think the Beavs have a better chance of breaking through to the top than the Bruins do, even, is just that you have, you know, in a typical year, you might have one or two conference stories where they have like the quote unquote unfinished business stuff going along. I mean,
yeah,
four teams in the Pac-12 have that potential this year with Caleb Williams and his injury in the title game and him coming back. Certainly he will be playing one more year at SC and that's it. He will not be traveling he won't be playing any Big Ten reps for the Trojans. Yeah, Penix in his final year. I think that's his final year, right? Nix is in his final year. He got hurt as well. The Huskies arguably were the best team in the conference that didn't make the title game because of the way the rules got changed to allow Utah to get into there. And then you had Cam Rising, who, just like Caleb Williams and just like Bo Nix, suffered an injury this year that prevented them from reaching whatever the potential is that they thought that they could reach, right? So you have four different unfinished business stories from the perspective of these hotshot quarterbacks in the Pac-12. And I imagine that one of those four is going to pan out to some sort of sensational season, if not more than that. So that's the thing that, the Bruins, I definitely like their team and I like their chances to finish high in the conference. I absolutely do. But I feel like just the chances of one of those other teams going nuclear and having one of those super special seasons, I kind of feel like the Bruins are in that position where when they got Josh Rosen that first year and they had a really nice season, but they had a couple of those weird losses and it just didn't quite work out. I'm most notably thinking of that horrible game where Washington State came back and beat them at the end of the year. But I just feel like the Bruins are going to have some growing pains with either their freshman quarterback or either their transfer quarterback or whoever's going to be playing quarterback for them. Maybe it's Ethan Garbers. To the point to where I think they could have a really good season, but I don't know if they're going to have a conference champion season. But, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
Remains to be seen. Hope springs eternal, too. All right, Mike. You got any other headlines?
No, that's pretty much it. Let's do some basketball talk.
Let's do it.
Do you think we drink too much?
No, we don't drink too much. Men face reality, women don't. That's why men need to drink.
I hate it when podcasters talk about what they're drinking.
What else am I going to drink, Bob? A fucking Fresca?
Before we get to the basketball talk, I just do want to welcome you to the What's Brewing Symposium, a conversation over drinks. I have poured myself another cocktail that was, I think it was originated in New Orleans, but if it didn't, it was certainly one of New Orleans' most famous cocktails. And this is a vieux carré, if I'm saying that right, some French word. I think that's roundabouts what it is. But it is a drink that's got some rye whiskey, and it's got some vermouth, and it's got some, some brandy or some cognac, and then a little bit of Benedictine, and it's really yummy and good. And I pour myself a double, and I'm enjoying it right now. Mikey, what are you having?
I am having a Strauss Brewing Red Trolley. Carl Strauss Brewing Company.
There you go.
Red Trolley Ale. I remember having this at. You remember? You've been to what was the Universal Amphitheater, correct?
Oh, of course. Many concerts there.
Yeah, I had I think it was the, I can't remember. I think it must have been the Melancholy Tour to see the Smashing Pumpkins.
Smashing Pumpkins.
And got there early, and I was like, ooh, what is this Red Trolley? And got it, and I loved it, and that was my introduction into Red Ale. And like all beers, it has a special place in my heart. So I saw it, and I was like, I haven't had you in a while. Let's do it. UCLA is not playing any team with red, so I think we're safe this week.
Very good. Very good.
I did want to ask you about that. I wanted to ask you guys, do you have any weird superstitions like that? Like, obviously, you don't wear red when you're playing USC. Take off that red shirt. Or do you have any weird
I used to have a ton of them.
Yeah,
I used to have a ton of them, but now, really, the only one that survived, other than obviously not wearing red at inappropriate times. I don't wear a lot of red anyway, just because.
Yeah, right.
But
I don't have much color in my wardrobe. That's
red's the only one that I've for the most part eliminated. Although my favorite dress up shirt is a
dark red, you know, it really could be described as a cardinal shirt. And I don't know what that says about me. But
yeah, I have a red crushed velvet blazer.
Yeah.
And it usually only comes out at Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's appropriate. Anywho, like, probably the only one that's that still survives is if I'm watching a game and it's not going the way I want to go and I'm watching it on TV, then maybe I'll go get in the car and turn on the radio. Or if I'm listening on the radio, maybe I will hurry home so I can watch it on the TV or turn it on some sort of streaming thing. I will change the way in which I'm watching said game to try to mix up the juju of the game. That's probably the only one that I have left. Whereas before, cool. I had a bunch of different superstitions. So, yeah. And thank you once again for listening to the Symposium, Conversation Over Drinks. And that's what we're having right now, me and Mikey and Bill at certain points of this time of the evening. And for just how much a month, Mike?
$2.
Just $2 a month. You can send the What's Brewing Show into the future by supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/What's Brewing Show. And we appreciate your support.
Go Birds.
All right, so talking some UCLA basketball, and the Bruins had a nice, relatively easy weekend with a couple of games against the Washington schools. They beat Washington 70-61 in a game that was a little too close for my comfort, seeing as Mike put the entire brand of the show on the line. But the Huskies ended up, the Bruins came through against the Huskies. That was good. Mike, you escaped on that one. And then also.
We protected our rep, bro.
Yes, yes. And Washington State, the game, it was tight at the beginning, I suppose. And then once the Bruins got the lead, they kind of just kept building on that lead and ended up winning, going away at the end, 176-52. So certainly. Especially after having a close game against Washington State in the first matchup up in Pullman, kind of a nice turn of event for the Bruins to bounce back from their pair of losses they took against Arizona and SC. So, Bill, Mike, you know, what do you guys think about? Let's start with the Washington, I guess, Washington game first. What do you think?
You know, it was up until the Washington State game, it was the MO. MO might be a little too strong, but the current trend for UCLA where it's strong first half, second half. Like, I really think it should have been more of a blowout, especially at home against Washington. I really do. Like, there was really no need for it to get close at the end. Only win by, was it less than double digits, less than double figures?
And at one point they were up by 16, but yeah, that's not how it finished.
That's not how it finished. So, I mean, it's just, it was one of those, just those same kind of frustrating games. The second game was so much better.
Not Todd's game.
I know,
the
but the second game was so much better in terms of how they played their guys and everything. Well, like you said, we'll get back to that in a second. But that's how I felt. Mike, how about you?
Same thing. It was UCLA got the win, but it was the third game in a row in which the Bruins had a bit of a meltdown in the second half. They were playing decent basketball, if not good, in the first half, and both offense and defense just disappears. Luckily, UCLA has just been able to rely on their defense. And this is something that Josh Lewin pointed out. And I wanted to look to see how far back or, you know, how recent this stat was. But this is just pretty crazy. UCLA's radio announcer Josh Lewin put it, the later it gets, the tougher it is to score. And aside from the USC game where the Bruins gave up 24 points in 6 minutes, UCLA has been able to stop their recent opponents. Against Washington State, they limited them to only 7 points and 2 field goals in the last 6 minutes and 45 seconds. They limited Washington to 13 points and only 2 field goals. They had a ton of free throws in the second half, but and that was in the last 6 minutes. So only 2 field goals for the Huskies. Arizona, even though that game was a loss, UCLA limited Arizona to 5 points, 2 field goals in the last 5:26. And against Arizona State, 5 points, 2 field goals in the last six minutes, 13 seconds. So I kind of noticed that too, but when Josh Lewin brought it up, you know, I realized that the defense, even though it kind of disappears and they let teams back in, and especially that the game against the Trojans was just atrocious, UCLA has done really well at the very end of games, just like putting the clamps down. They just got to keep up with the offense. And we finally saw what the potential of having a good offense and defense is in that Washington State game, as Bill pointed out. They just were consistent, and they just would not let the Cougars do anything in the second half.
I will say this. There's a couple things I want to ask you, Mike. Number one is, how nervous were you when this game gets close at the end against the Huskies, knowing that you had said that we would shut down the shop if they lose this game at Pauley Pavilion? Just it never really got that close, but it got close enough. So how nervous
I was getting a little happy.
Were you getting? I mean, Bill was already like, he had already uncorked a bottle of champagne.
Yes. You're like that one sicko's picture going, yes. You know, that weird guy in the window going, yeah. Yes. Yes. I wasn't nervous, but I realized when I realized Washington was on a run and they could potentially catch up with UCLA, I was like, oh, yeah, I made a bet, didn't I? but
that's
I
about the point at which I tweeted
at that
you.
Point, yeah, exactly. At that point, there was still a lot of time. I think when you tweeted at me, there was like 7 minutes left. I'm like, it's still a little early. And sure enough, yeah, UCLA just kind of shut down the Huskies at the end. But yeah, just another uncharacteristic game. You know, what did they have, 18 turnovers? And Mick Cronin was like, for other coaches, that's like 24-25. Like, he is serious about not having turnovers, and they clean that up in the second game. So
yeah, well, that, you know, that's one of the things where it's like, they, for the first time in four games, they actually shot a decent percentage. They were 49%, but mm-hmm. it was also, is that the most turnovers they've had all season? If it wasn't, it's one of the only games where they had that many turnovers. So I mean, that's where I kind of made up the difference there, right? With 18 turnovers, very uncharacteristic for what this team has been so far. That part, I texted you at least once, or tweeted at least once, when they were up by 7 with like a minute and a half. It just was a little too close for comfort, I'm sure. Now, let me ask you this about the characteristic of the meltdown in this game. Like you said, Mike, you said it was like the third game in a row, or whatever, however you want to characterize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was this meltdown, and Bill, this is for you as well, like, was this the same as it was against SC in Arizona? Or is there some sort of element to where they got the big lead, and then do you think that they might have been trying a couple things out, you know, workshopping some things in game that kind of allowed the Huskies to get back in order? Or you think it's none of that?
I can't answer the whole workshopping thing. I have no idea what the game plan was behind the scenes. But in terms of is it the same result? I'd say no, because they won versus when SC and in Arizona. But it was the same thing. A championship level team shouldn't do that.
Well, I mean,
a championship level team shouldn't get that kind of lead and then let it slip away. They should. There's going to be ebbs and flows to it, but yeah, it should not get that far. But they should keep it around a double digit lead or more, like they had it.
Well, it's very weird, because in their defense,
I didn't mean it like that, or more. What, a triple digit lead, Bill? Yeah. But you know what I mean.
In their defense, they have, in games where they've started slowly, they have done a good job of rallying and winning going away. But in the last three games, though, they have, you know, when they've gotten out to good starts, it's been the opposite of that. And, like, is that something to be worried about with this team, where they, like Mike's talking about, you know, Lewin saying that the scoring, gets tougher at the end. But, I mean, I'm sorry, if you do it over and over and over again, it becomes the character of your team.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, is there something that Cronin's got to do to adjust? Because typically we celebrate coaches that have, whose teams do better after halftime than, as opposed to the opposite. We don't have enough data here yet to make any rash assumptions about Cronin and his style. It's only a very small sample, but
I would say this. I would just say
in the short term, this is kind of worrying.
But Mike, and chime in on this one too. I would just say, for the Washington State game, that one broke the trend of three games in a row of weak performances in the second half, and it also showed something else. What I notice about the second game is, number one, the veterans got a lot more rest without being in foul trouble. They were just resting. Jaime Jaquez had like 5 or 6 minutes of rest in the first half, and he didn't have any kind of – he wasn't in foul trouble. They just rested him. So they're resting legs. They're getting they're allowing their star performers to get more rest so they can be fresher throughout the game. Number two, Jaime was able to, you know, maybe because he was hitting threes, but was able to move away from the block where he's been I don't want to say just pigeonholed, but that's been like his spot. It was his spot last year. He did well last year, but defensive caught onto it, and so they make it really hard for Jaime to do his thing on the low post. They moved him out to the three, and he was hitting him, and God, it just opened up everything. It just seemed like a whole different Jaime, a whole different team. And that kind of characteristic of resting players, trying having more players come in, different players, you know, sub in and out, and having Jaime come out to the three-point land, it really changed a whole makeup of the game, at least in my opinion. Mike?
Yeah, you hit upon it, the resting of the legs. And that allowed obviously, you have the bench guys play a little bit more, but not only did they play a little bit more, but they were contributing as well. Dillian Andrews, he is going to be a freaking stud in the next few years. He was playing fast. He was playing efficient, not turning the ball over too much. You know, Mari Bailey, he's clearly, you know, 100%, and he's looking really good. You know, we didn't see Will McClendon because he's been injured, but apparently he's full go, so we should see him in the next few days. But, you know, and Adam Bona, not getting too much. Getting more than he had in those two losses to Arizona and USC, so that's good. Maybe he's comfortable, and maybe he continues with his production. But, yeah, just from top to bottom, there was just contributions from everybody. And that, I think, is what UCLA is really going to need going into March, because, you know, it's fine to play with eight guys on a regular basis, but you need to learn how to play with 10, 11, 12, especially if there are injuries, if there's foul trouble in the tournament, because in the tournament, you have one game. You lose, you workshop anything there and it doesn't work, you're done. But obviously you win and you move on. So, you know, right now it's a good time for Cronin to get more players, more playing time. And no, yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Bill.
All right. Well, looking ahead, they now have the Oregon schools in front of them this week. They're going at, right? So they got the Beavs on, is that a Thursday night game, right, Mike? Cause you're covering that.
Yes. That is a 6 PM Pacific tip off.
Nice beaver.
So that's at Oregon State, and then they have the Wimpy Ducks.
The Ducks? They're wimpy. They don't even have teeth.
And that's on 2 days later on Saturday. On
ESPN.
ESPN,
7 p.m.
Thank you very much. So not televised versus the Beavs.
Nice beaver.
And then you get ESPN action on at 7 o'clock, at night, primetime game for the Duck game. How do you guys feel that's looking going into it?
Both of these teams are beatable, right? We beat them at home, but, you know, it's a different...
They beat Oregon 65-56 at Pauley Pavilion, and they haven't played the Beavs yet,
sorry,
have they?
Sorry, they have not. They have not. It was weird. I know they played Oregon at home. I was like, why wouldn't that this sister school? But anyway...
Stupid unbalanced schedule.
But in terms of Oregon, they've already beat them at home. Oregon's usually plays UCLA very tough. Dana Altman is a really good coach. This year is just not their year, but it's at Oregon. It's against the top 10 team, so expect Oregon to play probably above their pay grade, right, for this one, and expect the same thing from Oregon State. So
so far in conference, Oregon is 8-5,
yeah,
right? There are a couple games, 2.5 games back in the conference. Oregon State, the Beavs are 3-10 in conference, so they're not in the conference race at all.
It doesn't matter, though.
It's on the road.
It's on the road against a ranked team. You know, UCLA as the ranked team, these teams are going to go all out to try to beat you. So, you know, I'm hoping for the best. I hope to God, instead of getting a 1-1, we can get a road sweep, which would be awesome,
mm-hmm.
and keep that one-game lead over Arizona. But we'll see. I mean, Arizona's looking good lately. It seems like the UCLA game was like the trigger for them to where they've won, what, 6 in a row, I think? 5 or 6 in a row?
There would be three in a row.
They've only won 3 in a row? Okay. I don't know where I get the 5 or 6. But the idea is that they're looking better, so we got to win both games up in the P&W.
No, you're right, Bill. They've won 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row.
6 in a row, Mike. There you go. There you go.
Oh, 6 in a row. Sorry, I thought you meant since UCLA.
No. So 6 in a row. So it's
yes, you're right. You're correct.
So it's something where you know, that's what I'm worried about. But do I think the Bruins can do it? Yes. If they play the way they did against Washington State, a little bit more rest, a little more your usage of your bench, I think we'll be okay. Mike?
Well, and the other part of that, too, is that the Bruins need to hold serve because the Wildcats are going to go 2-0 this weekend. They're at the Bay Area schools. So they're not losing to Cal, and they're not losing to Stanford, right?
Wait, no.
Wait, sure I wish not. Jamal was here to talk about how great USC, yeah, Cal Berkeley's doing, right? Because God, how many games have they won this year?
Three, and they've only won two conference games, and by extension, they've only won two games overall. And my daughter has not been to see either of them. It's very sad.
Sorry, I'm sorry about that, Megan.
Yeah, you know,
Cal may cancel their season.
I think.
And
they
who
should.
Would care?
Yeah. Right.
It's
Megan, we care.
David Woods, I am with you on that one.
Yeah. Arizona, their schedule down the stretch is they have we're scheduling them to be 2-0 after this weekend. And then they host the Utes in Colorado. Then they host Arizona State rivalry game. And they finish at USC, UCLA. So you'd say there's a very good chance for the Ducks to pick up a loss in one of those last three games. Mm-hmm. But I would say they're probably looking pretty good to win the next four games. On the other side of that, the Bruins, this is a very big road trip for them.
Yep.
If they can get the road sweep, that will be a nice feather in their cap because the week following, that's when they host Stanford and Cal. So figure they're probably gonna definitely go 2-0 next weekend, but this week is the problem, and then they have to go at Utah at Colorado before hosting the Arizona schools,
which is gonna be crazy.
I think both teams have about the same level of difficulty in their schedule
at
this point.
Because Arizona,
but it comes at different times.
Yeah, Arizona ending the year with USC and UCLA is not that's not a cakewalk for Arizona at all at their place.
I think it's very likely that both teams end up taking one loss between now and their season-ending matchup.
Uh-huh.
Mike, does that sound about right to you, too?
Yeah.
But still, it could be huge for the Bruins if they don't take that L, mm-hmm. right? They're able to walk in with more than one game lead against Arizona, and then it's not on the line. But, I mean, I think we're all kind of expecting that to be the case, right?
Yes.
One way or another, the conference title is going to be on the line in that last game of the season, more than likely. Mikey, how are you? What are you thinking about this weekend?
It's definitely going to be tough. Doesn't matter who it is. Playing in Corvallis, Oregon State just sometimes sneaks up on you, and especially when they're not good, which is unfortunate because they've actually been pretty decent in handful of the last decade. And then you have Oregon, rabid fan base. Crazy atmosphere that could just throw off UCLA as well, because I'm not saying that's what that had any part of UCLA losing at Arizona, but that's a big distraction. But if they play peak UCLA, and we saw that I believe against Washington State, where the defense is playing to its potential as well as the offense. Rather than, offense is good and defense is, has been subpar or back and forth. What we saw against Washington State is what I think we will start to see more consistently going forward. You didn't want that pattern of having that lull in that second half, but I guess maybe they kind of had to go through that a little bit. You need to learn to handle the adversity I'm sure I wait on them. Just three games with a subpar second half, but if they continue to play the way they did against Washington State, I think they can go 7-1 in these last eight games.
Okay, so before we move on to the next thing, which will be Bill's favorite part of the show, Bill, just real quick, two sentences. How do you think they do this weekend, record wise?
I think they go difficult, but I think they go a 2-0 road sweep.
Wow, nice. Let's go. Mikey, what about you?
Road sweep.
Oh! I'll just be the contrarian then. 1-1, They lose the wimpy ducks. The ducks actually have teeth, apparently.
They sometimes they do.
There we go. And then we're hoping that Arizona takes an L next week. That's kind of the way I see it, but hopefully I'm wrong. All right, Bill, hard out Bill. He's on the clock, so we need to get to his What's Brewing.
What's brewing with you?
You ask me.
What's brewing with me?
Yeah.
What's brewing with you? What's brewing with me? What's brewing with
you?
Okay, people, we have 2 minutes per What's Brewing because Bill's on the clock. Bill, go.
Guys, it's cool, man. My mother-in-law sold her home and she's now living with us.
Sweet Jane.
Sweet Jane. And we're, you know, soon going to start building the ADU onto the house. It's just really cool to have family. It's really cool to have the boys have their grandmother that close to them. I wish I had my grandmother that close to me. I mean, it wasn't like she was far. I lived in Riverside. She lived in Paris, California.
I lived with my grandmother for a time.
Did you?
Yeah. Early years.
Yeah, and it's cool. I loved seven. It. My grandma loved me. I was spoiled by her. It was great. It was a great great thing. And I love the fact that you know, the boys get to have this while they're still around in high school. And
that's very cool.
Grammar. So that's what's brewing with me. I love it that my mother-in-law's there. Mike, what's brewing with you?
Not much. Just getting into the thick of basketball season. Already prepping.
Which
for,
is football?
I'm already getting asked if I can go to any of the potential NCAA tournament games. So, you know, we're in that mode. Still 2 months out, but wow, no, it's next month. just trying to get organized with that. Me and the kids, we, you know, had fun this weekend, still practicing with Violet as she started her first soccer team. She's also feeling the pains of it, so I'm teaching her also how to take care of her body in terms of icing and putting her leg up and stretching and doing all this. So, yeah, pretty fun, pretty busy weekend. Jake, how about you?
Just real quick, a little watch this show.
Watch this show.
Jake. He watches too much TV. No one can get through to him. Jake. I really hope you know that doctor who is fake. Jake. There's more to life than Sherlock. Just a fight in neutral.
Wait. No, there's not.
Watch this show.
This week, I not only watched, but I also read All Quiet on the Western Front. I had read parts of that book when I was younger. I didn't really remember it too well, but I've certainly been on a World War II, World War I history, you know, 1850s and later kind of kick. So it's all in that same kind of milieu. And I wanted to read this again because of the movie that had just come out, you know, the German movie by Edward Berger. I will tell you, when I read All Quiet on the Western Front, and this is a book by Eric Marie, what's his last name? Eric Marie Remarque. By the way, why do you think Eric has a middle name of Maria?
Catholic? His mom or dad are Catholic?
He actually changed it to honor his mother. He had a different middle name when he wrote the book and became famous. But anyways, World War I veteran that wrote this first-person story narrative about a German soldier in World War I. It instantly, when I finished it, skyrocketed to like one of my top 10 books of all time. I love this book so much. So much. It's so
awesome.
Good. I urge
you all
to
read
it.
You told my boys to read it.
It's so, and it's short too. It's only a couple hundred pages. Just read the book. Read the book. It's amazing. But
so
then I watched the movie.
Don't watch the movie then.
The movie's fine. The movie has no relation to the book. Other than a couple of the characters are named, the same. But so, as far as like the action of the movie, what happens in the movie, the plot of the movie, it really bears almost no relation to the book. So you can watch both and just imagine that both are totally separate. Like forget that they're named the same thing, and it's two completely different experiences.
It's like,
both of them good. The book, 1,000 times better. But still, the movie very good, but totally different. Like separate them in your mind. But if you're gonna do one, read the book. Bill, you had a follow up.
No, I'm just saying it's like Man in the High Castle. The show is nothing. Like
it's like Blade Runner versus
yes.
versus
oh
the
my
book,
god!
Right?
But
I mean,
you're
yeah.
right. Oh wow,
yeah.
It's so different.
My example is The Natural.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a million of these, and this is probably a good After Dark topic. But for brevity's sake, I would just say I can't recommend that book highly enough, and especially for this generation. That's why I urged your kids to read this.
Yes,
story of true adversity, and
you mean not true adversity, not like. not being able to buy something or get their DoorDash.
Not manufactured adversity, yes. Anyways, we all have our struggles. I don't want to diminish any of them, except for the losers of this generation. Yeah. Anyways, Bill, you want to end the show?
No, man. Thank you so much.
Well,
Mike,
you don't want to end the show? You want to do another hour?
No, I know. No. Mike, thanks for joining us via phone. I appreciate it. We miss Jamal. Hopefully next week we can get all four of us back.
That'd be nice.
The gang back together. But until then, as always, go Bruins.
Go Birds.
Good evening.
Smoke 'em if you got 'em.
Try us tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
It's got to be in or out, Mom. In or out. Well, I need the door closed.
Thank you for your cooperation.
Dude, Rob, we play some ball on the West Coast.
The final word is boob.